Good morning. I am Sherry Duncan from James Madison University, and what I'd like to do this morning is to share all our experiences with e-resources. I'd like to very briefly and quickly go through where we started and where up to where we are today, and then from that point, talk about some of our issues, what we'd like to do as far as making some changes and enhancing what we're currently doing, and then hopefully get your ideas on that as well. E-resources, something that we're all struggling with managing. So, if everybody's ready, we'll begin. In 1996, we acquired our first e-journals. We had less than 20, and most of those were free with print. I'm sure that's familiar with most to most of you all. Forgot about that. 1997, we had our first e-journal collections via state consortium, and so our e-journals kind of exploded almost overnight. At the same time, we decided we needed to start tracking usage for print journals on an annual basis. Previously, we'd only done that every 5 or so years when we would do our journal review. And then we also, at the same time, acquired our first electronic databases, those as well through the state consortium. In 2000, we had 2,500-plus e-journals. And that included excluded the full text available through some of the aggregators. Those 2,500 plus were just individual journals or publisher packages to which we subscribed. We began tracking usage for e-journals because we started to have a mechanism to do that. And as you all know, the mechanisms weren't very good at the time. So we had one person that was trying to compile the print usage and then also trying to figure out this e-journal usage and what we how we could best gather that and track that. We also added an A through Z journal list, which we had had previously on a slightly lower level, and we began doing some programming on our end and making that a more complicated list. And then we started adding streaming audio music reserves at the same during the same year. At this point, we decided we needed a little bit more help, and we added a 30-hour person to assist us with that. Before that, our serials department was only two full-time staff members, and we added the 30-hour. The streaming audio music reserves was done in the music department, not, of course, in the serials department, and with a little bit of work by our catalogers as well. So then, I hate PowerPoints, so I thought I'd make them a little more interesting. 2002, we had 4,000 e-journal subscriptions, again excluding aggregators. We had a significant decrease in print journal subscriptions, and I'll show you a graph in the moment that really brings that. Makes that evident. We started adding e-books, University of California, e-press, you know, a few free e-books here and there, and then a couple of individual e-books that we purchased. We implemented a link resolver at the same time, and then also set up some procedures for managing e-journal holdings, which included staff members checking e-journal collections on a regular basis, spot checking to make sure that our holdings were accurate according to what the publisher had. And as you know, sometimes we found it was the publisher that had the errors, and this was a way for us to catch those errors. During this period, we decided we needed another full-time position, which was transferred from our periodicals desk. We opened up our periodicals to the public. It had been a closed system, and because it was a closed stack, we had a couple staff members manning it, and also student assistants. We were able to reassign those staff members and the student assistants to give us help in areas that we were needed, because at this time we could see the beginning of the decrease in our usage of print journals. So we wanted to put more emphasis on electronic resources and also in other areas. In 2005, we had over 7,000 e-journal subscriptions, 3,000 electronic research database subscriptions. We started adding streaming video. We acquired an electronic resource management system, which we began implementing that year, and it took us almost a full year to implement it fully. We discontinued print newspaper check-in so that we could, even that little bit helped. We could focus student efforts to another area. And then we added a locks system as a way of helping us ensure that we were archiving some of our journals that we were purchasing or subscribing to. So, where are we today? We have 10,000 plus directly subscribed e-journals and consortial purchases. We have 35,000 plus additional e-journals via aggregator databases and open access. 500 plus research databases, 12,000 plus e-books, 2,200 streaming videos, and that's growing daily, 200,000 plus streaming audio tracks, and hundreds of thousands additional online files of primary source material through online collections. That's a lot to manage, and our staff has grown somewhat over the year, but not totally, except for the streaming videos, the streaming audio, and the primary source material and some cataloging of the e-books. Everything's handled through the serials department, the subscriptions, the licensing, everything having to do with the electronic resources. The cataloging and the ongoing maintenance of the others are handled through either cataloging or our music library, our media resources library, etc. So I was telling you how our subscriptions had increased for electronic. As you can see, at the same time, they've decreased for print and for microform. The purple or reddish purple is the electronic, the yellow is the print, and the microform is the dark purple below. Just a visual of what our current collections look like for e-journals. E-journal use stats, we noticed that the usage of e-journals increased exponentially. Of course, part of that is because we were acquiring more e-journals. But the print and non-electronic journal usage decreased significantly. The green is the current print. The purple is the microform, and the light yellow is the bound. So those have gone down. So as you can see, we have a need not just with e-journals. That's a significant event and a more trackable event than some of our other electronic resources have been so far. But the emphasis needs to be for us on our electronic journals, our electronic books, our electronic databases, and so forth. Without gaining that much more staff, how do we do that? Just a quick look at where we're at with cereals right now. We do, as I said, manage most of the electronic resources. We have a fairly sizable cereal staff compared to some of the other institutions of our size. JMU is a mid-sized, mainly undergraduate, with some doctoral programs. And we've managed to add those over the years by negotiating with other areas and also by doing things like opening up our print periodical stacks. What are the responsibilities of each position? The department head negotiates all the licenses for all the electronic resources. Also manages, of course, the unit and serves as a liaison to the reference area. We have an electronic resources library and in reference that does a lot of the collection development for e-databases and interacting with the liaisons for each department. So that's someone that the department head for cereals works with closely. The assistant department head and library management systems administrator backs up the department head. And one thing that I didn't mention is the library management system is also administered by cereals. That happened kind of by accident, but it's worked out well. I was in the systems position, and we had a state hiring freeze, so we couldn't hire for the cereals position. I took on both, and here I am. That hasn't changed, but and that's 7 years later. My assistant now does most of the library management administration, which includes the library catalog. She assists with the staff side and also with the web pack, working with public services and technical services in all areas of the library. On that, she also is responsible for our link resolver system and our federated searching system. And she has help from an application specialist that assists her with the management of those systems and developing programs to ensure that staff in all areas of the library can do their work as efficiently as possible and that we can provide the access to our materials, electronic and print, as effectively as possible by developing applications to push those materials out. We also have a statistical analyst in cereals, and this person's job has also grown. She handles the electronic resource management system, inputting all the data from the licensing. She also not only tracks usage statistics now, she tracks the library inventory circulation and financial statistics as well. So we've pulled a lot of things under one department. Then we have our two cereal specialists and four student assistants who do the more traditional cereal work. Okay, that's pretty much where JMU's at now. We have done a lot. With not as many staff members as we need. I grant that it's probably more than a lot of you have to deal with, but we've pulled a lot into one area, and by doing so, we ensure that things are handled consistently across the board and that people, liaisons, public services, everyone knows who to come to when they have questions, If one person that handles a particular area is not available, then someone else in that department can pick up and answer the question or do the work. So we've got backups and teams for everybody within the department. We had a lot of work done, but we're constantly analyzing our workflow to improve it because all of these collections keep growing. So there are some factors to consider when we're looking to the future. E-resource management requires higher skill level, including greater technical troubleshooting and problem-solving abilities. We found that some of the things that for print resources we've assigned to students, we can't do it as easily with electronic resources because of all the additional factors that need to be considered. Collaboration and communication between serials in handling electronic resources and licenses and all the other factors that go with them requires that communication between serials and other library departments is essential to providing the support for e-resources and encouraging good access to those e-resources. Effective e-resource management also demands more staff time and attention than the management of more traditional materials, and I'm sure all of you know that as well. Other things we have that are more external, the open access and evolving scholarly communication movements. Those models ensure that e-resources will continue to increase, but we don't know what the future is going to look like for those. We don't know what where the funding is going to come from necessarily, and the pricing models remain unclear. If some of you have looked at any of the listservs lately, you know that this is an ongoing discussion that's not going to be resolved anytime soon. We know that patrons want the simplest, most direct path to information, and we know this because we've done usability studies. They want that one search box where they can find whatever they want. They don't care what format it's in. They don't care necessarily what subject area it's in, if it's applicable to them. They don't care who the author is a lot of times. They just want it, and they want it in front of them as quickly as possible so that they can do their research. And this is not only students. Faculty members are the same way in a lot of cases. Portability and convenience are increasingly important. We have students dragging laptops into the library, of course. We have the wireless connections, but we also have them pulling up information on their cell phones. And anywhere, anytime, accessing that information. We have faculty members that also want to access what they need in the way of the library's resources from England, where they're doing a course, a semester abroad course. And we also know that technology continues to evolve. It's not going to stop anytime soon. So what do we think that we need to do? We need to decrease the time spent on print materials in favor of resources. And by we, I'm talking about JMU. That doesn't mean that print resources are any less important. That means that we have done print resources for so long that we have a lot of the utilities in place that we need to expedite that processing. We know that there are certain disciplines that want more print sources, the humanities, for example, whereas other disciplines, the sciences, want more electronic resources. So we need to learn how to focus our efforts in order to satisfy both needs. We need to improve the efficiency and the workflow for e-resource management. Again, we're always looking at our workflow, but we've reached a point currently where we can't do anything any more efficiently, so we need to look to external sources to help us with that. We need to streamline statistics gathering and utilize information more effectively, and this is something that some of you have heard in other presentations, even this morning. The USTATs take an awful lot of time and effort to gather and to analyze, and we don't spend as much time analyzing those statistics as we should in order to make the wisest choices for our collections. And then we need to evaluate and implement the new technologies. We can't just stop where we're at. Students are using iPods. We need to look into how we can use that technology for pushing our information to the students. RSS feeds, any number of new technologies that are coming out, because we are not only responsible for making these things available, we have to make the students aware of them. We have to make the faculty members aware of them. And in many cases, that means we have to get that information out to them, what's new, you know, what's applicable to their area of research. And finally, we need to enhance patron access and services. So how do we do all that with the resources we have and no foreseeable future for increasing our resources? How do we get from where we are now to where we need to be? We have some ideas, but I'd like to hear yours as well. Anybody have any ideas? That's a wide open question, isn't it? Well, some of the things we've thought about for increasing the staff time on e-resources that we need to, and yet not neglect our print resources, we've thought about things like eliminating print journal check-in and claiming. As you can see, the USTATs have declined drastically for print journals and microform journals. So we're still spending a significant amount of time on that, even though most of it is student time. There still has to be someone to manage the students. If you add enough student hours together and calculate the cost for that, that might be enough to hire a 30-hour person or 30-hour staff member that could do some of the higher-level work. Another thing, we still have a serials person that's checking in our standing orders. Not our monographic standing orders. Of course, she does that, but she's also still checking in the more periodical standing orders, the things that come annually, and we need to look at how we can remove that from her so that she can spend more time on her cataloging duties. Revisit our microform and binding. That's, as you saw, our usage for those formats are declining significantly. Use vendor-supplied MARC records when possible for our e-books, for our books, for our journals, for our e-journals, wherever we can get those records in batch and load them into our system. Make use of what our vendors have available to us and also what our systems, our ILS systems, can do. And utilize vendor shelf-ready services when we can. So those are some of the things we were thinking about in trying to shift some of our emphasis from processing print into processing electronic. Some of the other things we've thought about to cut down time, right now we have a link resolver system and that we host on our own server, And we have an A through Z list that is hosted by a vendor. That vendor offers, Link Resolver services, open URL services. So we're thinking about combining those two into one so that our staff only have to maintain one knowledge base. Why should we continue to maintain two? More training for staff outside of serials and for student assistants and those that can help when they have a little bit of downtime in checking our e-journal collections, our e-book collections, to make sure that what we're supposed to have, we have. We spend an awful lot of time doing that.
And can you tell us again about how you do that?
Yes, I can, certainly. We were finding that our reference desk was catching a lot of things that we should have had access to and didn't, or we didn't know we had access to, because what the publishers were telling us or what our vendors were telling us we had and what we actually had were two different things. So each of our staff members, each of our serial staff members currently have responsibility for a number of collections. And when they have a little bit of downtime, they take a collection and they check it. They spot check it to make sure that the number one, they check it against our A through Z vendor list to make sure that that vendor agrees with what the publisher says. And most of the time that's accurate because the vendor gets the information from the publisher. So they can then use that as a master list and check our catalog and check our link resolver to make sure that the holdings and the titles match in both of those places as well. They're responsible for certain collections. We've decided that we need to try to check those at least 3 times a year. For others, we can check them once a year, and for some, we check them twice a year. And we try to do a quick check at the end of the summer before the new semester starts, and then also at the, we try to make sure that two of those checks at the end of the summer before the new semester starts, and around March, after we know that most of the changes that the publishers and the vendors have made for the beginning of the year have been implemented. Because we don't always get new title lists, we don't always get holding changes, we don't always know when this publisher has lost access to a title and another publisher's picked it up. With the e-books, we just by chance found out that one of our e-book vendors had switched titles around in the collections that we subscribed to, and some of the titles we thought we had, we no longer had access to because they'd moved those to another one of their sub-collections. So we did that by having a member of our cataloging staff check the e-book collections on a regular basis. And he usually does that when he loads the new MARC file or, as he has time. You know, everybody has, maybe not has time, but they have half an hour each day where they need a break from what they're currently doing. And this is something that's kind of a no-brainer. It gives them a break from the more complex work that they do. So most of them actually enjoy doing it, but it does take time. And it's something we tried to have students do, and we've had limited success with that. So we might have students check a large collection and then have a staff member go back and spot check the students' work and look at the errors that the students say are within that collection. Yes, ma'am.
Which ERM system do you use, and also how do you gather user statistics for the resources?
Okay. The question was, which ERM system do we use, and how do we gather use statistics for our resources. The ERM system that we use is innovative because we have an innovative ILS. So the ERM system works well with our ILS, and that's something to consider. You know, they say some of these things are standalone, but when you start considering trying to attach order records and check-in records in an ERM, it's something to think about. Use statistics, we have a staff member and then a student assistant. The student assistant downloads, and that's just about all she does through the semester, is download use statistics from the vendors. We're looking forward to sushi. We've done a little bit of testing on sushi, but not much because not many people have implemented yet. We have some promises, but not much to show for it yet. That would eliminate having to go out to each vendor website. We've got this particular student is graduating in May, so I'm fighting for a 30-hour person to replace that student so that my staff member doesn't have to train someone each time to go out to each vendor site, what each requires, you know, what parameters put in, how that vendor supplies the statistics, what format, and then how to compile all those statistics into one area, one spreadsheet. We try to do stats monthly for each vendor, but definitely quarterly, but keep up with it quarterly, I should say, so that at the end of the year, and my administration likes to have stats by the 1st of August. That doesn't happen because the vendors don't get us all the stats by the 1st of August. So we get as many as we can compiled into a spreadsheet. Those we put into an Access database, and we have a program, an SQL program, that pulls that data out upon request through an interface that liaisons can look at their statistics for their fund. They can pull up statistics by vendor. They can see that a particular journal had 20 uses under one aggregator, 30 uses under another aggregator, and 20 uses if we had it directly. But that's one of the programming solutions that we've come up with so that my staff don't have to spend a lot of time digging up those statistics for each vendor or each liaison upon request and then explaining them to the liaison. They'll still help the liaison out, but the liaison can go, the subject area specialist can go and generate these statistics automatically on the site, and then if they have questions can come to the staff member. That saved us some time. Yes, ma'am.
I saw that when you were showing the PowerPoint, you mentioned that you have 10,000 e-journals.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious for one aspect of that. At our library, you know, like we kind of steer clear from subscribing to an individual single e-journal,
mm-hmm.
and we prefer the packages, you know, because mm-hmm. of all the proxy issues and license negotiation. Like, you know, if work is involved, just like a particular database versus a journal.
Right.
So our strategy is to steer clear from a journal, which are single. I want to know, in this 10,000, how many do you have single e journals and how many are through the package? Do you know the breakup?
Okay.
And if you know, I also want to ask you this, that how, I mean, what is your, what is the strategy to cope up with this issue that you have so much work to subscribe to one e-journal, and how do you manage this issue?
You've given me a lot to repeat. The question was, first the comment was that they steer away from individual e-journals in favor of packages because it's just easier to maintain and deal with a package than it is to deal with an individual e-journal. That it does create quite a bit of work when you have so many individual e-journals. Most of our journals are publisher packages. Not all of them are, though, because there are society packages that are much smaller. We have one society that we have four journals through. We have a number of individual journals. I would say the breakdown, probably less than a fourth are individual journals. Less than a fourth, I would say. But there, of the 10,000, we probably have about, yeah, that would probably be about right. But, those are necessary in some cases because there are journals that you can't get in any package. And the way we handle that is we subscribe to those journals through our journal subscription agent. And they help us maintain that information, and they're the ones that work with the publisher to make sure that we have access and that everything goes through smoothly.
I just want to add, mm-hmm. I want your advice on this rather, because you said that you manage it through your print vendor,
mm-hmm.
and they help you manage. We're going through APSCO, we subscribe to APSCO, and they give us access, like, you know, to almost 500 journals through the EJS.
Okay.
And to my woes, you know, I came to know that even though I have access to all those 500 online journals, out of that, there are only about 184 or so that are authenticated directly through the EJS online.
Okay.
And for rest of them, each one of them, I need to go to the publisher site, sign up an agreement, get a user ID password, give them my IP addresses, only then I will have them.
Wow.
So can you imagine the work?
Yeah. Well, let me say, we use EBSCO as our agent as well, but we do not have their EJS. We have our A through Z list through another vendor, and what we do, but EBSCO's been real good about helping us make sure that we get access to those.
Password, everything, uh-huh. But the burden is on me to go to the publisher's website and register there, sign up their licenses. Can you imagine, like, 500 licenses?
Yeah, we have a few of those that are like that, but in certainly EBSCO can't get in the middle of the licensing. And the way we handle those is the staff member gets the license, sends out, we have a state contract addendum that our state attorney general's office came up with that facilitates the license negotiation process if the vendor will sign that addendum. A lot of times they will because they know that this is standard for an institution within our state, and also because the things that we insure want to insure those clauses ensure that our state rights are protected, and the vendor is used to dealing with public institutions, so they're aware of that. We will occasionally get somebody that won't negotiate, and that makes the negotiation, or won't sign, that makes the negotiation process more difficult. But if you have that template, if you know that there are certain things that you want in a license or want to avoid in a license, if you put that all in an addendum and get the vendor to sign that addendum up front, that saves a lot of hassle in the negotiation process. You do that as well? Yeah, it's good.
Otherwise, I tell them, you know, you do my way or I'm walking
out. We've had to do that with a few, mainly business databases. But to answer your question, there are some that you just can't get away from doing it that way. Our staff member, she starts the process, I finish it, and in the meantime, she signs it up. And she has contacts with almost every publisher now, so that even though EBSCO has those contacts, she also has those contacts so that it facilitates when she needs to set up a new subscription. But again, we try to avoid that whenever possible. It just it's a hassle. And then she has to check those journals while everybody else is checking their e-journal collections. She also has to check those individually. And there are a few that you lose access to every year. She's come to know those quite. Yes, ma'am. Okay. The question was, have we developed a collection development policy for our e-resources? The answer is, we have a collection development policy. We don't have a lot about e-resources in it. What we are thinking, one of the things we're thinking about doing is setting up a subcommittee of our collection development committee that deals solely with e-resources, because we've found that the collection development committee spends so much time haggling on the e-resources that they never get to some of the other issues that are on their agenda. We are in the process, and that's one of the points that I wanted to make, but the other one was that we are in the process of setting up an e-metric system so that we have measures, clear measures, on analyzing our e-resources for renewal and for picking up, well, for picking up new ones as much as possible. We've decided we need a couple years' worth of data, preferably at least three, before we make a decision on that resources being used. And then at that point, we will use the usage data, we'll use information from the specialist and from the department, and look at other things that are involved to make that decision. But to answer your question in short, that's one of the things that we're just now in the process of doing and should have been done a long time ago. But how do you get we have been grappling with the issue for a number of years, and it's been a difficult one. Yes, Bob?
On the book side, I work for a bookseller, mm-hmm. On the book side, we're finding that a lot of collection development people are stating a very strong preference to wanting to title by title selection rather than bundles.
Yes.
And I'm wondering, what's the feedback you're getting from your colleagues in collection development about approaching journals on a more bundled basis rather than on a title by title?
There is some concern about purchasing e-journals as a bundle, but what we find is that when we get the bundle and we get it as close, you know, they offer a business collection and we know that most will be highly used in business, then we get that collection. We find that some of the things we think wouldn't have been used that much actually are, because there's one particular publisher that we thought about a third of the journals that we were going to get from them through a package deal would not be used at all. And those have turned out to be some of the most highly used ones. What we're finding is that if they're indexed in our databases that we have, students and faculty go to them, and then discovering probably never have thought to look in those journals for them. So the e-journal collections haven't disturbed us as much. By the same token, we do continually analyze those statistics, and if we find that there's a publisher where we're using 10 of 30 journals, we'll go back to that publisher and negotiate. Or if we can't negotiate down the price or negotiate a change in the collection, then we'll drop that collection and pick those up on a one-by-one basis. Something we don't like to do, but we will do. But the e-books, that's a different matter. For e-books, we do prefer except for reference collections, we do prefer the title-by-title basis because it gives us more flexibility. Yes, sir?
We're in the process of reorganizing our workflow from based on form to based on function.
Mm-hmm.
For example, currently invoicing for standing orders and books is done by acquisitions. Invoicing for print serials and e-journals is done in series. So we're going to reorganize and invoices and all under one function. Same thing with check-in, other things like that. We have all this duplication of tasks left over from when everything was printed. So,
right.
I think our major problem with doing that is our staff still thinks in terms of us and them.
The comment was that they're in the process of moving from form to function as far as organization. And so they're trying to reorganize so that if you're doing invoices, you're doing invoices for everything. It doesn't matter if it's serial or electronic or databases or whatever. But there's some resistance to that. Comment was probably because it's us and them. I think also because acquisition staff think about things very differently than serial staff do. And we tried putting ebooks in acquisitions. It didn't work because they would subscribe to it and forget to tell the liaisons that they'd subscribed to it because there was nothing to pass through, or they'd forget that it needed a small licensing fee that had to be paid the next year and it wouldn't get paid. What we're looking at doing is maybe combining serials and acquisitions and realigning the tasks, and at the same time having cross-training so that we can teach those people that are used to dealing with one form how to deal with the other form.
That's exactly what we're doing.
Okay.
Anybody else is doing anything similar?
Okay. I think we're out of time. Yeah. Sorry. Thanks.